The Politics, Politics, Politics program is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/JURY. This is the way I do the show, folks. You give me money and I keep talking. We bump this thing from one day a week to 3 days a week. And now, you want to know what? It's not just your old buddy Justin talking into the can anymore. No, he's bringing other people on to prove that he indeed does have friends. So go ahead and support my effort. Please be the father that I never had and recognize me when I'm trying hard. Patreon.com/JURY is where you can do just that. Also, thecontender.us, before our design half of our quartet left for Mexico for an extended sabbatical, they made these awesome Contender logo pins, these lapel pins. We were going to just use them internally, but I thought they were so rad that I just put them on sale today. So if you want to buy them, go ahead and get them. There's not a lot of them, so if you like the way they look, go ahead and get them now. Go to bit.ly/votingpin. Again, bit.ly/votingpin. But enough of talking about how we pay for the show. What do you say we go ahead and do the show itself?
Politics, 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 politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Friday edition of the Politics, Politics, Politics podcast. As promised, we are doing guests now. Look at this. It's not just a one mic show. We have guests on. Joining me is somebody that many of you who watched when I was part of the coverage for BitTorrent News for the Republican and Democratic National Conventions will recognize his lovely face. He is Michael Shore. Colleagues, maybe? I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I mean, one-time colleagues, once and future colleagues, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's a confusing thing, what's going on over there. I mean, I guess they're figuring things out, which they're allowed to do, but I don't know. You'll always be my colleague. But
exactly. You will always be I will always treasure you as a friend. So we are here now. Nobody can stop this. No corporate shakeup. No twin CEO firings can keep us from having these conversations.
Right. That's exactly
here
right.
On my podcast.
Yeah.
So you want to know what this is really what I've been kind of dying to talk to you about since the conventions is I feel like, well, I don't even know what to ask because my broader conversation is I just kind of want other, perspectives on kind of the postmortem of this election. You're somebody that certainly has an eye toward history and understanding where things kind of fit in context with, you know, presidential elections in general. This certainly has been one of the most, outlier elections I can remember or in my mild understanding of presidential history can put it into context. So I guess let's start there. Where does this fit in the larger context of presidential elections?
Well, listen, I mean, I can only speak to the ones that I've lived through and in recent history know and studied, which probably starts, in earnest with the 1948 election. I started learning about Dewey defeats Truman, which may, yeah, in fact, many in the Trump camp are hoping is the type of headline they see on.
Yes, they are hoping that a triumphant Trump holds up the newspaper Hillary cucks Trump, and they will stuff it right back in the Democratic opposition's face.
Exactly. So I think that, so in the pantheon of those elections, this, there's nothing like this. There hasn't been, because it's based, obviously, I mean, we're repeating the obvious, but it's one candidate and that race and the primary race he ran as well. And the number of people that ran, 17 people ran for the Republican nomination, and this is what came out of it. And so I think that makes it on its own just sort of without precedent. But, and the topsy-turvy moment-to-moment changes that both social media and the kind of the zeitgeist of the Trump campaign have created make this unlike anything else we've seen.
So let's stay on this for a second, because I think we've seen both sides of this dynamic. Are you surprised that this election pretty much from pillar to post, from the moment where Megyn Kelly is asking questions at that first Republican debate in Cleveland to this second as we talk to each other, that this has remained a referendum on Donald Trump on some level. Like this has in primary and a general election, you would have thought at some point somebody, either Trump himself when it wasn't in his favor or another candidate when it was in Trump's favor, would have made this about something other than one guy.
Well, you know, Bernie Sanders tried to make it a referendum on Hillary Clinton to a degree. Although he came with ideas and plans, he tried to make it about Hillary Clinton. And because Donald Trump is who he is, it kind of emasculated the Republicans in making it about a referendum on Clinton. So by default, it became about Trump because of who he is. So I'm not surprised now because we're so used to it. I was at that debate, that first debate, and the way it kind of, you know, from the very first question, as you said, we saw this. Of course, nobody there could have predicted that Trump would have gotten the nomination on that day in 2015. But there was something different about this election from that very moment, and that has stayed consistent. But again, you know, I mean, the October surprises, there have been, you know, they started in September and they've gone through to right now, where the FBI is reopening the case on the emails. ABC News Politics reporting that. Everybody's reporting it now. It's not just a right wing excitement machine.
No,
so this could be the
although we are at one siren. Let's go ahead and just make take a look. You know, for posterity, we are at one siren GIF on the Drudge Report. So for those who track such things, we are currently at one GIF right now.
Surprising it's only one, because this is kind of the moment they've been waiting for 9 days or 10 days before the election. So I think that it's you know, this is what they've wanted, and this is the typical October surprise. I mean, not this specific one, but just the fact that this could be happening now. This is what they talk about when they talk about October surprises. We've just become inured to them because they happen all the time in this election.
So let me we'll get back to kind of the Trump phenomenon, because I think that there's obviously, this is not something that will stop being unpacked on this podcast. This is something that people will be looking at and studying, I think, for years and years. But let's get into the riches of October surprises for which we've gotten, because I almost feel like, number one, there have been so many that our taste buds are kind of even worn out for them, and specifically, it seems as if in energy, not only by voters, but by the media, that everything kind of crested at that Billy Bush grab him by the pussy tape, because that was so kind of beyond the pale, so crazy, that now even when other things that I think in another election would have certainly at least caused ripples, would have at least been like potholes in the road for a well-run campaign, are just non-existent, because it's hard to match a candidate in his own words talking about sexual assault and then having the Tiger Woods parade of women come out and corroborate it.
Wow, is poor Tiger still in charge of that parade? I thought Cosby would have taken over the Grand Marshal position in that parade.
That's a fair point. I guess, yeah, it is a little different. Although along with a Tiger, you know that you've kind of gotten to the end of it when the porn star shows up, and not to denigrate anybody's you know, position or anything, but that's usually the sign that we have come to the end. But do you feel that as well, that there's just this kind of like sagging of attention and energy sort of post that and post the debates?
Yeah, I mean, I do, but I think listen, when you get into the last 10 days and you have someone as dynamic as Trump, he wired $10 million more into his campaign, which is still $34 million short of the $100 million he said he was going to put in. This isn't going to stop. It's not that this race has already been, you know, I've predicted how it's going to end for a long time. But, you know, now with these FBI allegations, can Donald Trump actually make this about these emails, or is it still going to be Donald Trump centric the whole way? And so there are things about it we don't know, but yeah, I would, you know, I do agree that the die has been cast in a way.
So there are two moments, if we're going to look at the trend lines of the national numbers, which on some level inform the state numbers that actually decide who becomes president,
yeah,
that Hillary Clinton sagged. One was Director Comey from the FBI coming out, and although not pressing charges, not recommending to press charges, does directly contradict things that Hillary Clinton has said in public. And then there was the Republican National Convention, which obviously those conventions give X amount of bounce on either side, and Hillary right. Clinton a week later wound up having a larger one. But is this the silver bullet? I mean, like, in an election where anything can happen, is this specific thing the thing that that maybe Donald Trump can, you know, focus on for more than 5 seconds?
I mean, it's hard to say yes. If you say yes now, I'm going to say yes, because if I'm wrong, everybody's been wrong, and I'll just be another one of the billions that have been wrong. But if I'm right, people say, ah, Michael sure got that. Yeah, so I guess, yes, he can focus on this for 10 days. He, when there's something about Hillary Clinton, when he is able to sort of push the crooked Hillary narrative, then I think it works for him. The problem is, I don't know what voters are out there to attract. There may be some Clinton voters or people that came to her slowly that are you know, dissuaded by this news. But I don't know how he builds the majority that he needs in order to win. I don't know how he does, and I've said this for a long time. I don't know how Donald Trump does better than Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney lost. You have to do better than Mitt Romney. And yeah. I don't see what he does it, you know.
It also seems a little close, right? I mean, because like
these sorts of things. I mean, if you have undecideds, Justin, it's like this is when they make their break, right? I mean, a lot of voters break. A lot of independent. We're already seeing Gary Johnson and voters sort of that number dwindling because yeah. they're breaking for a candidate.
Apparently, including Bill Weld, who is just out here giving you know, interviews about how, hey, don't worry, don't vote for me if it means Donald Trump gets elected, which is just kind of you know. Jeez, yeah. Talk about the people you want in a foxhole.
Totally.
All right. So what is the most surprising thing you've seen in this election since the conventions?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is that the I would say the debates themselves, how unprepared Donald Trump was. There's a lot of preparation that goes into debating Hillary Clinton that's easy. I mean, she's a fairly easy person to debate because there's so much fodder over such a long time. He was totally unprepared, and I thought that was where he was going to try and make his move. And you know, to that extent, I found that very, very surprising. Secondly, I think some of the states that are now in play surprised me. The fact that Georgia and Iowa are as close, I mean, Georgia on its own, as close as it is, that Iowa is close, that a third-party candidate in Utah may actually win that state. That sort of stuff's surprising to me. The map is surprising. But just his lack of preparation for those debates, you know, it made me think that does he really want it, because he just showed up.
I mean, where is that conversation? Because that's something that I get a lot from people that don't necessarily follow you too, that you have friends and friends of friends that know that you follow politics or that you work in the political media. Right. And there's always some version of, is Donald Trump really running for president, or on the far tinfoil end, the like, is Donald Trump a sleeper agent? Is he the Manchurian candidate for right. Hillary Clinton that at some, you know, a backroom deal at a cocktail party in you know, 2009, this was a plan that was hatched or something like that?
Anything to get rid of the Bushes, right? That he was just there to make sure Jeb wasn't president, and oh, yeah. He stayed for the ride. Yeah, I mean, you do hear all of that. And here's where my sort of dull context of history comes in. When George H.W. Bush ran for re-election in 92 against Clinton, people thought that he didn't – there was a faction that thought that this guy doesn't want to be president anymore. He's kind of done. He just wasn't into it. But he still – I mean, he was president, but B, he came and he showed up and he – gave every indication that he wanted to win, and he in the waning days of the campaign, he kind of closed the gap and did quite well. This is not really how Donald Trump has operated at all. So you asked for a surprise. I mean, that's really surprising to me, because I thought that once that he got a taste of how close he was to power, that it would really motivate him a little more than it had. But he's just doing, he's going to the same audiences, saying the same thing. When he went to Virginia Beach and in North Carolina, but it was mostly Virginia Beach last week. And that same day he was in Johnstown, Pennsylvania after the debate, two states where he's not meant to win. Yeah. The audiences that are not strong for him, except in Virginia Beach to the military. I was so curious as to why he was in those places. And that to me, I mean, it's just been a so curiously run campaign.
Well, curiously runs one way to put it, certainly. And I think that if there's one little subsection of a Twitter that has become obsessed on the conservative side of kind of fantasy booking this Trump campaign of like, how would you do things differently? How small of a shifting of direction could you turn the Trump campaign that would make things better, different, more responsive to the world that he is playing to is kind of this own cottage industry. And here's my theory. If in Cleveland, the chants that had been created and by the crowd and were became this hallmark were not lock her up, but drain the swamp, which I think is like the to me, that was like one of those like, oh, wow, that's an effective little slogan for Trump. And if Trump runs as this populist, let's throw all the bums out, you know, kind of guy, I think that's a better brand for him than anything that he's come up with other than that. I feel like he would have done a lot better. Now, of course, that means he has to keep on message. He has to, you know, say it during the debate when 80 million people are watching. But do you buy that? That was his best, the best pathway for him was as this Rage Against the Machine populist.
Yeah, I mean, it was the pathway because it was successful. You have to say that that was, I mean, it worked. So yeah, I mean, who are we to sit here and say that was a bad idea? You know,
yeah.
Because it was what got him where he was going. He was aided by the fact that so many people ran for president, and this kind of, he was able to tap into his celebrity, which has worked both in this country and in other countries for a long time. And people say Ronald Reagan wasn't elected because he was a celebrity, but he was elected governor of California in large part because he was a celebrity. That popularity and that notoriety elevated his candidacy there. And then, of course, as a governor, he went on to then run for president. And so he wasn't elected president because of a celebrity. But I do think that his career started because of America's unusual fascination. I guess it's the world. I'm not as excited about it, though. I did buy Phil Collins' book yesterday. I'm not as excited about celebrity as other people are. But there's no question that his celebrity kind of propelled him to this spot. And because of that, you get people. And I'm not saying this. Well, yeah, it doesn't matter how I'm saying this. There are people who are the general level of people who are fascinated by and motivated by celebrity doesn't meet with the intellect of a lot of voters. And I think that's probably played into his success as well. But you have to say he's done it right. I mean, there's nothing, whatever has worked for him, he's going with. And, you know, he happened into a couple of pieces of good fortune, and that's kind of been the story of his life as well. And so I think in this election, you know, 11 days left, there's stuff to look at.
So you mean the we are operating then at peak Trump, no matter what, that he has done the best with the tools available, and to imagine a world where a Donald Trump is you know, crafts a message and then sticks with it and doesn't go off strip, A, neuters what makes him special, and B, is just an unrealistic, it's like yelling at the clouds to form in a different formation.
I think that's true, but I think there's another thing here. I mean, it's you have to look at the sort of the raw numbers of this, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing he can say that's going to upset the devout Trump voters, right? And
no.
It's not just Republicans. And it's nothing that Hillary Clinton can do to win over the really vitriolic Hillary haters. So Trump has to do something in the waning moments in the winter of this campaign in order to bring people into his campaign. He's got to raise his numbers. And I don't – that's what I've had the hardest time seeing all along, is where he does that. Where's the geography for that? Where are the numbers? In 10 days, can a reopening of it – I don't think it's a reopening of the investigation. They're just taking another look at some of these emails to see where they've been. Can that change? I don't think that's going to change the dial. I think for a couple of days it might, but I don't think it's going to change this election. So I still don't see where he grows his number, and that's all he has to do to win the presidency.
I think that that's, you know, as I've thought about it in the back processor while doing this amazing interview, I think that, that part of this FBI thing, it's going to go for, it's an announcement, right? So unless there's another leak or another announcement that this is happening or what it is indeed focusing on, this is kind of a 24-hour story, right? It's just
But except it's not going to be, because he's going to talk about it for the next, you know, until the 8th, or maybe until his concession speech, he's going to talk about it.
Oh, certainly. And he will.
Stuff came out earlier. And what this also does is it gives Republican Senate candidates in these close races something new to talk about too, which is always the thing that's forgotten. This isn't just about Donald Trump. If the Republican Senate is able to hold, then it's going to be, you know, very difficult for Hillary Clinton to get around this stuff for a while.
In another election, running against somebody different, do these WikiLeaks things, how do these WikiLeaks emails rattle? How do these land?
Well, you know, listen, if you had I hate these hypotheticals, because
sure,
let's say you had another candidate who wasn't Hillary Clinton, or yet let's say, better yet, let's say that another Republican candidate who wasn't Donald Trump was running, right?
Yeah.
Well, there would have been months of negative campaigning against whoever that person was. So the person, if we close our eyes and look at, oh, John Kasich would be doing much better, the John Kasich that we said goodbye to in May is not the same John Kasich who you would have seen, you know, on the ballot now, because he would have been a battered John Kasich with lots of opposition research and mistakes on the campaign trail. So it's not the same quantity that you're dealing with on Election Day in November that you had in the primary. So it's easy to say pie in the sky. You know, Bernie Sanders would be running, you know, roughshod all over Donald Trump.
Sure.
Donald Trump would have for half a year been battering, and the Republicans battering, Bernie Sanders, so it wouldn't be the same Bernie Sanders that we saw and loved.
So let me rephrase it then. Let's just look in the fantasy baseball sense that we have standard value over replacement Republican candidate, right? Hillary Clinton is Hillary Clinton, and these emails start to surface. Like I think in a world where we freak out when a presidential candidate doesn't give a good answer to a plumber, these emails make more of a noise than they have now.
Well, if you still had Hillary Clinton in a keeper league, by the way.
I'll tell you what, that was a good find post 2008, man. If you kept Hillary in your keeper league, that was a good snag.
Exactly. This is where you're supposed to be rewarded, right?
Yeah. But I mean, do you think that these would have been more damaging? Like that there's it is the uniqueness of Trump's candidacy.
I think yes.
That
first of all, there wouldn't have been. We talk about October surprise, and for people who don't know what that is, typically in every presidential election, there's been something that's an October surprise where there's a bit of news similar to what we've just gotten that changes the course of the election in some way. Certainly changes the conversation, right?
Yeah.
This election has given us a surprise almost once a month. So and that's where it would have been different. Had there been another candidate, the October surprise would have had greater impact, because there would not have been a September, an August, a July, and a June surprise. So to that effect, yes. So if it were, yes, there would also be a party that was organized around a candidate to deal with these things and to press them and to spread them. And so I think that would have been, they would have had a lot more backing.
And to have, you know, surrogates that, you know, say things appropriately and stay on message and know what they're saying, and maybe have offices get yard signs and bumper stickers. Let's take a look here at, you mentioned that the big thing that has stuck for you has been understanding where does Donald Trump get to above Mitt Romney? Like, how does he like, that was a losing proposition for Mitt Romney.
Right.
How does he do that? And what you've seen from the Trump campaign is, okay, well, here's where the math is. It's in independent voters. It's in blue-collar voters. We're going to take some of the blue dog Democrats who feel uneasy about where the economy has gone in rural areas, and we're going to turn them into Trump voters.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
I mean, that's the assignment.
Yeah. Exactly. Is there a moral victory for that philosophy in this election if there is no – even if there is no Trump victory? Like, is there somewhere the people who believe in that idea can say, well, you want to know what? But we still did well here, and we can build on it if we just don't have the July through November surprises.
Here's the thing. If you ask me, I would say no. But, you know, Howard Dean, when he had the 50-state strategy, when he ran the DNC – you know, he said it made a difference to lose by 8 in Alabama when the last guy lost by 10.
Yeah.
I don't see that because I don't see, first of all, the idea is to win, right? And so
when theoretically. You're running a
presidential campaign, yeah, theoretically. But if it were the Republicans, they had an honest candidate and who wasn't some, you know, anomalous figure like Trump, I think they would have sat down and they would have said, listen, we got really close last time here, here, and here. Let's make strides in these states and really work these states and not worry about these states as much, because all we had to do in 2012 was win X, Y, and Z, and it would have been a totally different thing. They didn't get that opportunity this time because of who their candidate was. So I think that's really what's been problematic for them. And I don't think they're going to take themselves as seriously as I take them, because I think they're going to look at Trump as being a one-time, one-off type thing, which he may have been. But the people that are supporting him are not. And they're still going to be looking for people to vote for. And they're engaged in this thing now. And they weren't maybe 4 years ago. Not all of them, certainly.
But the question is, and we're going to find this out on election day, how big of a block is that? And how hard does the Republican candidate in 4 years, assuming that Hillary Clinton wins, do they want to chase after them?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to because they need them. I mean, that's the problem that the Republican Party has, is they can't win majorities without their fringe. Democrats have proven that you can win a majority and you can become president even by alienating what is perceived as their fringe. And I say that only because of what people say. I think there are great differences between how the public identifies the fringes of both parties, because I think they're very, very different. That's not just my bias. I think there is a real strain that we're seeing in the Trump campaign of racist talk and hatred and otherness that you don't see from the left. I mean, the left there, what is perceived as their fringes, and I hate saying it, are people who are, you know, and don't work with income inequality or a corporatist and, you know, in some cases hawks, but not even that much. They're trying to label Clinton that. So I think the fringes are different, but the Democrats can do well without that part of their party. The Republicans cannot do well without their fringe. So the Republican Party is in a really tough spot because they don't know what to do, Justin. They don't know how to
get
these people involved, you know, and they don't want to, but they have to.
But that's more of a damnation of not recruiting new voters, right? Like that. Yeah, you have a map problem now because you have gotten to the point where you need to appeal to literally anybody who has ever said that they are a Republican at any point. But the point is not to necessarily just have that; is to always move and change and evolve and find everybody that could support your cause, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think you're right, and I think that the Republicans are also they blew it, right? When it comes to these new voters, and you know, of all the years to have a centerpiece of your candidate's platform being that you want to build a wall between here and Mexico and send people out of the country. Well, whoa, whoa, whoa! Here's this bonanza of new voters that you could have had a share of. And even though immigration isn't necessarily their first issue, when they're, you know, excluded from the get-go, that they're not going to give you the fair shake that you
It's a pretty bad way to start a conversation, right?
That's the best way to put it, yeah.
You know, it's just it's not you know, there's because again, the Hispanic and Latino voter voting bloc is multifaceted. It's a lot more complicated than I think a lot of people want to make it out to be at first blush. And there's a lot of ways that you can talk to them, including the economy, including family values, right? Like, but yeah. But if you just start with this, we need to watch out for the other kind of thing. It's a messaging thing, and it speaks to inexperience, right? At its very at the very like you know most you know emotional about it today. You know the and certainly not to say that there's not troubling elements that reverberate into our society or it is dog right. whistling, but like. It just you got to win, right? That's the point. The point is winning.
But it's always what comes with being behind the curve of social progress, and that's what's hurting the Republicans right now is being behind that curve. They'll catch up. They'll find a way to catch up at some point, and there will be charismatic and effective people that come out of different constituencies that are Republican. But it's not there yet, and they had an opportunity to make it there now. But as I mean, you said it perfectly. It's a terrible way to start a conversation.
Where are you at on some of the hand wringing of Trump talking about the rigged voting and not conceding kind of stuff?
I mean, in a way, it's a brilliant piece of politics because for so long, when people have talked about the voting being rigged, as we know, it's from the people who have been shut out of being able to vote historically and legally. The black vote, the reintroduction of the Voting Rights Act, the suppression of voting in the South and in some states, the lowering of early voting, all of these things, that in a way is rigging the vote, right? But they've sort of co-opted this issue and, you know, and created a truth out of a falsehood. And, you know, so it's good politics and a lot of people. And when you go to these Trump rallies that I've still been fortunate and privileged, I guess, is that the word to go to? I think you'll find that there are people there that think that it is rigged and he gets a lot of mileage out of it. But I think on the whole, it's disproven at every turn that there is not a rigged election going on. Republicans are saying it. Secretaries of State are saying it. It would be hard to rig this election. First of all, rigging it in a state or a county, or certainly a county possible, a town possible, a state really very difficult, in a country almost impossible. And then when you see how he is losing in states that he should not even, in which the Clinton should not even be competitive, the rigging is too far spread to make it to make it real. You know, there's just no way.
Do you think that it's damaging? That there is that him even mentioning that the election results would not be legitimate is something that is staining the fabric of the American democracy.
Well, I suspect it's going to be so overwhelming that cry is not going to be. You know, listen, if in a close game, if the ref blows a call and you think, oh, the ref is a homer, right? He's going to always go for the home team. You say, oh, that made a difference. I don't think you know in a game that you lose by 30 and you're blaming the ref. Kind of tough in any sport, but I was thinking of football or basketball. Because 30 goals, you definitely can't blame the ref in hockey. But
no.
I think there's a sense of that. So his demeanor after the election, I don't think will matter because you're going to see Republicans scurrying from him almost immediately after he loses.
Do you think we get that's one of the things that I absolutely agree with, that I think that we are going to get the pinata season of Donald Trump, and it will probably happen by dinner time on election day, that you know we're just going to get the they won't be able to line up fast enough in front of those cameras to repudiate right. Donald Trump.
That's true. And then this sentence will be said a lot, but to his credit, Governor Pence fill in the blank.
Kellyanne Conway. Do you think that Kellyanne Conway, I feel like she's like maybe the only person that has come out of the Trump campaign that is going to be looked at as getting credit for being there effectively.
When you work for four candidates in one cycle, eventually you're going to hit, right? So, yeah, she's kind of, but again, you know, she did work for Donald Trump. And so there's a credibility gap that's going to be, that's going to hurt all these people at some point. You know, if people get rehired, bad managers in baseball just to keep this thing going, get rehired. New managers don't, black managers don't.
Sorry.
But when you see somebody like Kellyanne Conway, you're running for president in 2020.
Sorry.
Are you going to hire somebody who is associated with the Trump brand? I wouldn't, but, you know, I don't make those decisions.
Let me ask you one more thing about this, about the Hillary Clinton strategy. Because something that I found very, very interesting coming out of the conventions was that I thought she was playing a fairly risky strategy by making it the total referendum on Trump and making so much of her messaging about the unelectability of Donald Trump. And now, obviously, in an election where now we are a week away or we can change away, and we're seeing Texas in play and Utah might go to a third party and Georgia in play, then it worked, right? I just thought it was risky because at the moments when, you know, Hillary was winning the headline battle, which we've found out in this election is the surefire way to lose the war, Donald Trump was getting credit for not pooping on the floor. And as much as I think there was obviously a media expectation that was rewarding him, that was also kind of the standard line from the Democratic convention on forward, was that he was this frothing at the mouth madman.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say what the good plan was. That's something I guess you do afterwards. I think that Donald Trump, by default, I think that the people that engaged, I think that the Clinton campaign learned from the Republican primary. People that engaged with Donald Trump did not do well, and the people that let him implode tended to do better. Of course, he won, so nobody did better than he did. But I think that I think they made a calculation that let this guy be a show that goes under, and by that sense, more people are going to buy tickets to your show. And I think that's, you have to say that's worked to a degree, and it's worked because it's, that she is competitive in places that a Democrat would never have landed a plane in October before an election. So I think that's important to look at. And so I think, I think they did the right thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, it worked. It absolutely worked. It was just one of those things where it's like if somebody could have put a trank dart in Trump's neck and just told him to take a nap for 2 weeks, I think it would have been it would have been hard, because you have to constantly prove it, because it's such, if all of it, all the national ads are just, in his own words, Donald Trump saying crazy stuff, and then you come back from break to CNN and he's saying something reasonable or something you agree with or something populist, then it immediately undercuts that message.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that there are other ways to have skinned this cat.
Sure.
At this point, this one seems to have been the good one.
A 100. Hey, listen, there's a possibility that along when Paul Ryan and John Kasich are elbowing each other in the ribs to get in front of the camera first to talk noise about Donald Trump. The other thing that might happen is we might be getting the live shot from Austin, Texas, where Democrats are celebrating a win. Now, that is unlikely based on the numbers, but the fact that that's even a possibility is just a freak. I mean, like a Mormon won Texas by 16%. Like, you go to West Texas and try to tell somebody about the Church of Latter-day Saints and see how well that goes over. A Mormon won by 16.
That's very, very true. And listen, the other thing is, no matter the margin, I don't think that I think this would be it would not be considered a mandate by any chance. And I think the Democrats should know that. I mean, this was not people sort of, even if they win Texas, Hillary Clinton didn't win Texas. Donald Trump lost Texas, if that's the case.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's going to happen. But so the Democrats have to be very careful not to have that sort of cock of the walk, attitude about them when the next day. But by the same token, it does give them the ability to say, hey, listen, as we govern, we can start engaging people in places we never thought we could. And that's where, you talk about your 50-state strategy or whatever. Yeah. That's how you build. You don't do it in ways that are artificial. But if you do have success in places you wouldn't ordinarily have had it, by all means, try and exploit it, because it could stay in some places, not Texas. But
yeah. Although I'll tell you what, if you know, there's going to be obviously a big celebration if Hillary Clinton wins, especially in the fashion that it seems by the numbers that she will on November 8th. But on November 9th, you know, these emails are still going to be there. And this FBI investigation, whatever it turns out to be, will likely still be there. And this time, Donald Trump will probably still be talking because that is kind of the nature of Donald Trump. But it will be diminished now that he is not in position to be president. And that's going to be very interesting.
Or CEO, because apparently he's sullied the name so much that people are taking it off of some of his properties, and nobody wants to stay in hotels called Trump. So
you want to know what's fascinating about this election, amongst the million other things, but I think for political nerds like me, is you've seen some of the like dyed in the wool at the barricades Republican operatives that have broken off from Trump, kind of giving this, I think, very interesting commentary. Like Frank Luntz, I cannot get enough of Frank Luntz talking. And that's normally something I would never say in my life.
Right,
but it's
right.
Like he's got some very interesting stuff to say now. And the fact that he knows by his own numbers that Donald Trump is not going to win. You know, I think he's got obviously an insight into a conservative voter, and you know, it's been curious. And like, so one of the things that he said on that topic was that Donald Trump has effectively, and he knows him because he did a lot of polling for Steve Wynn.
Right.
That he has effectively changed his brand from high-end luxury, or more specifically, upper-middle-class people who want to live luxuriously, right?
Right.
To pins and buttons. And he'll be able to sell a trillion pins and buttons, right? But he's talking to the Shoney's crowd now, and that not that there's anything wrong. Hey, listen, man, I sell stickers. I'm all about the $5 price point, but at the same time, like that is a change for him, and that's the reason why, you know, that the Trump hotels are going to be Scion hotels going forward.
Right. Well, just interrupting for a second, are there still Shoney's?
I think there's still Shoney's.
Okay. All right. Because by the way, I'm in the Shoney's crowd. If that's the case.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. The transformation of Citizen Trump after this election will be interesting to see what happens to him. Because generally, I mean, you would think that a run for president would not sort of, you know, diminish who you were. But this one certainly, I imagine, professionally will have, be very difficult, especially in New York City where he spends a good amount of his time. Oh, there's Shoney's. And
there we go. You know, listen, the fresh new menu here at Shoney's, you know, gourmet style salads.
Look at that. Huh? Not gourmet salads, gourmet style salads.
Gourmet style salads.
Right. If they were gourmet, this is how we would make them, but they're not. So they're in the style of.
All right, last question. And listen, we got conservative listeners to this show, conservative viewers to this show, and I'm sure that these kinds of lines of questionings are stuff that you can just feel free to cut out when we are talking about Trump's first 100 days in office after he surprises everybody. But I do want to ask this. Do you buy the TV show thing or the TV network thing?
Well, I mean, listen, do I buy that there's interest in doing it? Yes. Do I buy that it's going to happen? No, I don't. I don't think it will. First of all, it's a terrible time in business to start a network.
Yikes.
And as we know, almost intimately, it's hard to keep a cable station on the air, as I know pretty intimately. And I think from a business standpoint, at a time when business is not going to be easy, you know, that's going to be tough. But it might be the kind of thing where he could have some success doing it because of that. That's where his brand is strongest, with a finite number of people. We'll know that number of people shortly. The number of people that would tune in to watch something like that, it hasn't launched very well. It looks like it was done. I mean, this is much, much more professional than the Trump Network. And he's trying to trumpet it as something really huge. But could it happen? Yeah. I mean, if he needs a hobby, but I think he's going to need a space in which to rehab his image professionally, and I don't think that that's going to be there, because I think it can be too caustic, and he has a lot of people that invested in his companies, and once his taxes come out, which I guess Governor Pence should be any day now, right? We'll see a little bit of who he's indebted to.
Yeah, I have a tendency to believe that we will get something, but it's going to be far more along the lines of a Facebook page than it is a full 24-hour
right,
news
but
network.
Here's the thing, Justin. If it's like The Blaze, is that something? Because I don't think of that as something, right? I think that some of this really out, way, way, way out, fringe, hard-to-access stuff isn't substantive.
So well, I mean, but The Blaze was, I mean, listen, it really depends on what he wants, right? Because The Blaze was, for Glenn Beck, a cash out. It was, I have X amount of people, you know, do the math on how many people will follow me from Fox News to a pay service, right?
Right.
You have an outside shot of trying to get it on cable carriage, right? And maybe now even that's slightly different if you can look at these online bundles like Sling TV and PlayStation View and stuff like that. Maybe that calculus changes a little bit. But that was him. That was Glenn Beck saying, hey, look, I need a paycheck going forward. Here's my paycheck because I'm a media professional. I don't know what Trump wants because I think that there's easier ways for Trump to make money than cashing out 10% of his followers now.
For
right?
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's right. I that's what I mean. I think that he's not going to do anything that could risk the bread and butter part of his business. And if his investors say enough with this, then you can be sure that he's going to listen to them because he's going to be, you know, he would never admit it, but in a subservient position financially to a lot of people and when it comes to business, because he's going to have to start fixing the things into which people have already invested money. And that's going to be his real estate stuff. And so if that's suffering, he can't do a hobby that's going to damage that brand either.
He cannot continue either by Facebook or by television to be a professional Molotov cocktail thrower.
No,
right?
I mean, far be it from him to agree with us, but I think that from, you know, from afar, that's what it would seem like. But, you know, there's a lot that seems like it should be that he's gone run right into the face of. So and done well at certain. I mean, I haven't been right every time about Trump, obviously. But I think that when it comes to the business stuff, he's going to want to protect that. And if this can do harm to it, I think people would advise him against it. But he's got that ego too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, listen, I was loud wrong. I made the declaration after the primaries that I was out of the business of fully doubting Donald Trump. I was not going to be surprised. I will now be surprised based on the numbers if he's going to be able to pull this out because, you know, geez, you know, that is a real, you know, the Philippe Petit who walked across the World Trade Center had a more luxurious pathway than Donald Trump has to victory on that current electoral map.
That's exactly right. Agreed. Plus one, as they say.
There we go. All right, Michael Shore, I'll tell you what. I got one more one-word question for you, and then we'll get you out of here. Which ruby red state on Election Day does not go for Donald Trump? So I'll leave Utah in there if you are indeed if you are a McMuffin believer.
The sign of a true friend is one who leaves Utah.
I'll leave the Utah on for you.
I don't want to take that bait. I was just in Utah covering that race, and I think McMullen's going to win. I mean, that's my
really
anecdotal, my anecdotal hunch. Talking to people and talking to young voters in Provo and in Salt Lake City is that this guy is they just don't, their families. They're talking about their families, and when, you know, a Mormon student in Provo is talking about his family or her family, it's a bigger family than mine, generally speaking. And so they're saying
generally
that they're not going to vote for Republican, but they would vote for McMullen. But I guess if I was going to take a bite of this contest, I guess I would go to Arizona as a state that's pretty red. It's been pretty red, and I think Clinton could win that state.
Which, I mean, and just another element of this topsy-turvy election likely that Hillary Clinton could win, John McCain up double digits.
Like, yeah. No, that's it. Those things are amazing.
Crazy pants. I mean, crazy.
Could be the same. The spread is there is not as big. And boy, Marco Rubio's in trouble. That race has tightened dramatically. The Herald, for the first time in a long time, not going for Marco Rubio.
Not going for Marco, the Herald, yeah. Huh? I didn't see that. I saw, I mean, the polls there have been weird because, you know, he was up like 5, then it dropped to 2, But at the same time that it dropped to 2, the DNC pulled their money out, and then it kind of went back up to 5, and now I saw a poll today that was even, so who knows? Yeah. I mean, I think if there's one, geez, talk about the walking nightmare of a year and a half for Marco Rubio. Like, you know, well,
can you imagine? I mean, finally going back into the race and then also the high profile that other Republicans have taken in this campaign. And so if he wants to look at 2020, it makes it all that more difficult for him. So many people who endorsed him who wouldn't go back. It's going to be hard.
I mean, not to mention the fact that, you know, I am sure there is a moment when he's watching video of Hillary Clinton collapsing, walking into her van, that you could just imagine in some Rick and Morty alternate universe that he would just have the Instagram of him doing pull-ups for his 6 a.m. workout, you know, in this vastly different election season. Michael, where can people find you?
People can find me. I'm covering this election, this campaign for the Young Turks. So at theyoungturks.com, I've been on the road for them. I'm going to be with Donald Trump on election night, wherever that may be. It looks like New York, but now that Clinton's going to be there at the Javits Center, there's new whispering that Trump may be in Florida. But I'm going to be covering this election for the Turks, and then thereafter I'm going to I'm always a Turk at heart, but I'm going to be looking for another fabulous network job, or Justin and I will get a phone call on November 9th from the good people at BitTorrent Live.
Maybe even November 8th or the 7th. Hey, listen, who knows? You know, whatever. I'll text you. I'm sure there's all sorts of fun stuff.
Right. I mean, stuff that we shouldn't even say here about BitTorrent.
But listen, at this point, it's like, I have very sporadic emails from them that are still coming from at BitTorrent. So, yeah. So there's something's there. And if they have a problem with me joking about it, then they're more than free to continue to be a thing and give me money. So that would be great.
As long as they get it, right?
Exactly. So you'll be able to see me and Michael on our new show on the Trump Network, after the election. I'm sure it'll be great. Michael, thank you so much for joining me.
It was a blast, Justin. Anytime. Thanks.
Okay,
a lot.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
That, of course, Michael Schur from the BitTorrent News Network, the Young Turks, does so many good things, man. I really, really love Michael Schur. I know that he is going to be somebody that, for many of you, is not your political cup of tea. But here's the one thing that I really, really, A, I wanted to focus on, and B, I hope that everybody can appreciate, is no matter where Michael is, you know, personally on the political spectrum, that dude knows his stuff. He has a very, very encyclopedic knowledge of presidential politics and politics in general. I remember hanging around with him during the conventions, and he would just be able to just pick out literally like every congressman walking by. Like, you wouldn't even see their whole face. It would just be like the eyebrow. You're like a wisp of an eyebrow. And you're like, oh, there, Representative King. All right. You want to know what? Let's just go ahead and do our emails. You know, this is real behind the curtain stuff. I had everything up here. But then I don't know if you guys heard that in the middle of the interview, we wound up having some random music play, and it was a pop-up, an autoplay pop-up. So I had to close literally everything before I found it buried behind everything else. So I'm totally screwed here on all of my prep. So you want to know what we will do? We will do the pole dance to end the show, because we will do our mailbag now. Elijah writes, Hillary Clinton... Oh, wait, this is our tortured metaphor. Hillary Clinton is the architect. She's part of an all-encompassing, well-run machine that promises you the same mostly peaceful and mostly stable world that you've been used to. In exchange, she merely asks that you pay no attention to the man behind the curtain and not ask the wrong questions. Also, her humanity is questionable. Trump is Agent Smith. His ultimate goal is absolute power, and he considers other people to be nothing more than a means to an end. Whatever principles he has are dwarfed by his own ego. He has also seemed to double in strength every time he should have been defeated. That's a good tortured metaphor. I don't see where we get a Neo, but I appreciate Elijah for emailing in. Tarkuza writes, I'm so happy that Trump is tanking in the polls. What do you Americans not get? The last time you elected a president with a doubtful intellectual capacity, we had the cluster F that is Iraq and the chain of events that led to the creation of ISIS. I am from Zimbabwe, living in Australia, very far from the Middle East, but the slaughter that that unnecessary invasion caused shook me to the core. Now you want to elect an even bigger fool? Question mark, exclamation point. Russia supports every despotic regime on the planet. An alliance between a Trump administration and Putin would be unthinkable. The U.S. and Russia would team up to create greater misery in the world. Hyperbolic I may be, but please don't let another fool be POTUS. Now, here's a funny thing. I wanted to read this, number one, to give a sense of what people from far outside America have to say about it, but also because, Tar, homie, what many Trump supporters would tell you is that only one person that you have mentioned is for interventionist policies. So if you are for the American president not running all willy-nilly into another war, then you should get on the toot-toot on the Trump train, which has no brakes. Oh, by the way, I didn't notice this because of the way this formatted, but Elijah, from back to the tortured metaphor, he did mention that we are Neo. We are told that we are the chosen one and only we can stop the enemy. Our power is a gift, and to not use it is just as bad as using it for evil. We help the enemy win if we don't do our part. Also, most of what we think we know about the situation is just injected effortlessly and unfiltered into our brains via the internet by people we don't really know. Well, Elijah, as one of those people that you probably don't really know, please don't take away my ability to inject my opinion unfiltered directly into your brain. Scott writes, after a lot of thought, I've decided that I'm voting for Gary Johnson. My logic is twofold. First, I live in Western Maryland, which means that I am held hostage by the voters of Baltimore, and it is a pretty solid bet that Hillary crushes there. Second is based on the logic that I can easily vote my conscience because it really does have very little effect. I was tempted to skip the election altogether, but several local elections still matter to me, so there you go. Tim writes, I reluctantly begin this email with a toot toot. If I lived in California, New York, Texas, or some other state that we already knew the outcome, I would have enthusiastically began this email with a puff puff pass to signify Johnson. Instead, I live in Wisconsin, where admittedly Clinton's chances of winning are 87% as I write this. But I voted the Saturday before the first debate. My mother is a town clerk, and I filled out an in-person absentee ballot with her, so she knows who I'm voting for. The rest of my family are enthusiastic hill dogs. Arp, arp, arp. They weren't happy with my past support for Gary Johnson. I voted for him in 2012 and during the primary this year with the old argument that a vote for a third party is a vote for Mitt Romney / Donald Trump. I think my mom has resigned herself to the idea that I'd be voting for Johnson, but I could not handle or understand my reasons for voting for Trump. Let me be clear. Donald Trump would make a terrible president, and I don't care. I consider my vote for Trump to be a vote against Hillary Clinton. All the evidence suggests that Hillary will continue the interventionist programs that kill people overseas. I told you, Tarkuzda! I returned to the email. I believe she acted criminally with her email server and put our nation's security at risk in an attempt to avoid FOIA requests. Also, as a strong Second Amendment supporter who lived in upstate New York, Oswego and Liverpool, get some salt potatoes. For a few years after graduating from college, I've seen the results of anti-gun policies put in place by New York liberals like Clinton. On the other hand, if Trump wins, I believe that he will be fought every step of the way and will accomplish nothing during his presidency. We will once again have a press corps that actually does their job. I guess I'm just sick of career politicians, and I want him to burn it all down. I wish I could take credit for this, but conservative blogger Bill Whittle says Donald Trump is the stave-puffed marshmallow man. We have chosen the form of the destroyer. Also, maybe if Trump wins, you'll have enough material to keep doing PX3. Will I continue to do PX3? I don't know. But I've seen this a lot. And Tim, I do not think that you are in any way an anomaly in this election. Sean writes, "Hey, I'm a Utah resident and a Trump supporter. I watched the debate in full, and I wanted to tell you how it looked through my eyes. I watched on YouTube where the video starts with a 30-minute ad for Hillary Clinton, essentially, which I saw as the Clinton campaign shooting themselves in the foot. I went into the debate with my no-ad BS filter on, and it reinforced my perception of Trump as an underdog candidate. This was followed up by Lester Holt drilling Trump the whole time, while Hillary laughed as her puppet did his job." I don't think Lester Holt did that bad of a job. I think his Lester Holt's problem was that you had to rein them in. You had to be notorious Chris Wallace. You had to be Chris Wallace. Like, you had to just shut them down and move on. But I think that kind of comes with a previous relationship, which I think Trump and Clinton have with Wallace. Aaron writes, "Not even a month ago, I was ashamed to even consider voting for one candidate that I didn't know if at the time I fully grasped what was going on in my mind and why I felt this way. Now that I've spoken with others in a number of different settings around my personal decisions, I think I have a better understanding of where my shame came from. My shame came from not having a sound mind or rationality, or didn't come from not having a sane mind or rationality. My guilt was coming from outside sources that weaseled their way through the ever-present holes in my mind where emotion and the politics of division have a symbolic relationship. One feeds on the other. If I feel one way, I know I'm more in line with these people who are, like me, mad, and I build a false sense of confidence around allowing more and more of these memes designed by campaigns to get in like worms and take over my mind. As I write this, I visualize actual parasites fighting for their own lives as my mind builds its rational immunities. If only mental health were that simple. Maybe one day we'll have a better understanding of exactly why we let these things control us. Aaron, thank you. Also, cure all of them. Except for me, Wiggy! Blue Gal in a Red State writes, "Arp, arp, arp." That's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm a voter in Indiana, and I've got a ballot measure that would enshrine the right to hunting and fishing in our state constitution. It states that hunting and fishing will be the, quote, preferred method of wildlife management in Indiana. This would seem to place hunting legally ahead of non-lethal forms of wildlife management, including relocation, fencing, etc., and may interfere in future efforts to find new ways to manage your wildlife. I would urge all Indiana voters to vote no on question one. And you want to know what? I'm going to go ahead and willy-nilly totally agree. I agree. This is one of our willy-nilly endorsements. Politics, politics, politics officially endorses no on question one in Indiana. Unless somebody emails me and says I should endorse yes. In that case, I'll flip it. Clay writes, "Hill Dog here. You mentioned that you'll be telling us who you're going to vote for. I'm worried that this is going to be your mic drop before you kill the show. Please don't. This is the only show I listen to that isn't obviously liberal slanted, which I really value despite being a liberal. It's an actual discussion, and I'm afraid how polarized this election is. If you say you're voting for one major candidate or another, it could ruin what you've built. Maybe that's what you're going for, but I hope not. On a related note, as a left-leaning independent, evangelical Christian Midwesterners, the let's just try stuff and see what works party sounds right up my alley. Sign me up." Clay, I am going to reveal who I'm voting for. I'm going to reveal who I'm voting for on Monday, the day before Election Day. And I don't know. I think it's going to piss some people off. I did it last year. I did it on jury. I revealed who I was voting for. And I am very much a steadfast believer in the idea that judge me by the content of my work. You know, judge me by the volume. Because whether or not you agree or disagree with who I'm going to vote for, you know, that's I want to prove that you can get somebody who can do both, who can have a political opinion and talk about politics in a way that does not necessarily tilt right or left. John P. writes, "No arfs or toots in this one. Can I just say how much I'm in love with all of you? I love the fact that this is a way that I can legitimately make a living. I love that I can read a phrase. No arfs or toots in this one." I love it. I don't like any of the candidates. I was reading an article in the newspaper that talked about Hillsborough County, Florida. This area averages a considerably higher voter turnout than the national average, and it's split evenly between Republicans, Democrats, and independents, and has a disproportionately high number of Hispanic and Black voters. But the most interesting fact about it is that the winner of this county has won 19 of the past 20 presidential elections. As someone from upstate New York, go to Dinosaur Barbecue, where the most Republican votes will always be outnumbered by the Democrats who are voting in New York City. It is hard for me to understand the dynamics of areas like this. Is the county a swing county that determines the winner of swing states like Florida? Is it secretly the only county that matters in the election? Or does the county just coincidentally have a demographic that perfectly reflects the opinions of the entire U.S.? John, it's the latter. They're not necessarily, they're bellwethers maybe, but they're not necessarily the way that you win an election. So in Florida politics, the way that things normally work, and things are changing, but if you're a Democrat, you have to turn out heavily Democratic counties. They're very, very important for you because by and large, the state by volume is red. So Hillary Clinton, that's why you're going to see Hillary Clinton a lot in Orlando and the surrounding areas, which that's actually a swing county. Orange County is a swing county. But like Broward County, Miami-Dade, that kind of those counties, if you do not turn those out in numbers for the Democrats, then you're screwed. Because you need those votes. You need those Democratic. You need those Northeastern expats that are now living in South Florida if you want to win Florida. So, yes, it's a bellwether. No, it's not how you win. Tom writes, I love the politics, politics, politics show and the political circus. I wanted to send you a taste of what Georgia's ballot is like this fall. I think this is a good conversation idea, and I'm interested as to what other states contribute or if there are any Georgians who have alternative takes on my position. The first one is a poorly worded plan to take a cut of all public school budgets and create a fund that will allow the state to take over failing schools. The language is really misleading. Quote, shall the Constitution of Georgia be amended to allow the state to intervene in chronically failing public schools in order to improve student performance? This is controversial even in the GOP who proposed the plan because it has the likely effect of increasing all school taxes, and there isn't a system in place to know what to do when these schools are taken over. It is assumed that rather than run the schools, the state will convert them into charter schools. Well, Tom, I would endorse your position, but you didn't give me the number or the ballot number. Come on. I'm sending willy-nilly endorsements. That's the idea. All right. You want to know what? I'm just going to ask you guys because, again, all my research just kind of went to poop. So I'm looking through here. I'm looking for a city to do the pole dance. Let's see if we can find. Oh, how about this one? I think we've already done it before, but we're going to do it again. What do you say? This is a good city for this, too. How about this? What do you say? We get off the plane. We see a man flipping cards in that desert glittering strip. Because, folks, we're in Las Vegas, and this is a Nevada!
Get on the floor if you got that booty.
Oh! Dance, 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 dance. This is at NBC, Wall Street Journal, Marist poll. Conducted from October 20th to the 24th with 707 likely voters, a margin of error of 3.7. Jill Stein, don't even show up for your shift. Jill Stein, you're not on the schedule. Jill Stein is not appearing tonight. How about this one? First to the stage with 10 points. It's Ben. Gary
Johnson!
He's not a dummy. You're a dummy. And your co-headliners with 43% of the vote, it is Donald J. the Cuck Hunter Trump! Toot toot! Maga, 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 maga. This ain't got no breaks. But tied with 43% of the vote, we have Hillary. Where my heel dogs at? Her, her, her. What you really want? Her, her, her. Clinton. We go high. 43-43 in Nevada. That is a state that now Real Clear Politics has Hillary edging, with 2% of the vote. But again, here's when I joke about Donald Trump having a very narrow path to victory, it's because he's not only got to win Nevada. He not only has to win Utah, he's not only got to win Arizona, he's not only got to win Florida, he's not only he's got to win Ohio, he's got to win New Hampshire, he's got to win all of them, right? Can't lose a single one. And then he's got to flip a blue state. Then he's got to be a play to hate a flipper, yeah. Play a hate a flipper, yeah. Man, now I'm in the mood for some juvenile. All right, everybody, that about wraps it up for this edition of the show. I want to thank Michael Shore for joining us. Please go ahead and give him a follow at Michael Shore. That is S-H-U-R-E. And follow his work on the Young Turks Network. You can email theyoungamerican@gmail.com if you want to email in. You can buy the Contender. Remember, the Contender pins. Man, these look so good, man. You're going to be stunting like $1 million walking into the voting booth if you got this on you. And I'm going to get these out ASAP. We got them in hand. So they're going out today if you order it up. That is bit.ly/voting pin, bit.ly/voting pin. You can, the music, of course, provided by Valesco and Trop Killers. Follow me at Justin R. Young everywhere. Continue to hit me up on Snapchat. I love you guys on Snapchat. Download archive episodes of this show at BonerWars.com. Folks, some people talk about politics. Others talk about politics. This is the only show that really talks about politics. We will see you the final countdown next week.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.